My name is Kirsty, and I am the host of the Mindset and Me podcast. Formerly, I'm an accredited transformational and mindset coach, Vedic meditation teacher, and wellness expert. I'm obsessed with helping you navigate the messy middle and find clarity in every season of life. Informally, I'm a pale rosé wine lover, chocoholic, and your new bestie. We get into all the life lessons and learnings from the most incredible guests to help you gain clarity and get into an abundant mindset. So go and grab a coffee, get cozy, get comfortable. This is the Mindset and Me podcast. So welcome to the podcast, Jules. How are you?
Oh, babes, I am. Well, currently, actually, I'm activating in Isle of Paradise. I'm developing. It is all good. We're recording on a Friday. My tan is on. My coffee is hot. What's not to love?
He's like, honestly, those who will see the video will see he's just beaming. He's radiating. He's glowing through the screen. It's beautiful. He's ready for the weekend. I'm honoured to be here in the process. Thanks, babe.
Mid-glow up.
Yeah. So Jules is obviously one of my dear friends, but he's also the most incredible brand founder. He's founded two amazing companies, and I really want to get into that and kind of everything that entails, because you do make it look effortless. You very much have that swan energy. You know, on the surface, it's all, we're good, we're glowing, we're ready, she's out. Whereas underneath, I know as your friend how hard you're working. So I guess for anyone who doesn't know kind of what you've created, maybe we could like go back in time a bit to the beginning, kind of talk us through how you got to where you are now. And then I'd really love to get into what it actually takes to be a brand founder.
Sure. I think firstly, I never thought I would have my own businesses. I never thought I would create brands. It was never something that was on my vision board, on my mood board of life. So for anyone, I think, tuning in who maybe doesn't have a brand yet or isn't in that space, don't freak out that maybe you haven't had your idea, because it comes when you least expect it. I started my career, I'm going to do this in a nutshell as rapidly as I can, but I started my career as a spray tanner, but I'd been to university. I had a degree in fashion marketing. So I learned about international business. I learned about brands, building brands, product development. But I went into the industry, I went into beauty, and I just, desk job, sweetie, is not for me. She is a creative. And so I actually trained in makeup and then trained in spray tan. And I loved working with product. I loved working with people. And I very quickly was climbing the ranks as one of the world's leading spray tanners. I was working on Dancing with the Stars, was working on Strictly, or it is in the UK, X Factor, The Crown, Fashion Weeks. I've been flown all around the world working with product. And at the time, brands were just throwing product at me and being like, put this on this celebrity skin, use this on this person's skin. And I'd use the product and I'd think, what? Like, what is this? Like, this is not a formulation. This is something that is being churned out to make money. And I really started to see that in the beauty industry, a lot of companies were pushing out product for the sake of pushing out product, to just make a sale, to hit something new to talk about within the magazine pages. And actually, I think that the beauty industry had kind of forgotten the consumer. So I remember reading an article in Vogue, and it was like, Jules is like one of the world's leading spray tanners. And I was thinking, if Vogue are writing that about me, but I literally am struggling to find products to use on celebrity clients and people who weren't in the public eye, and my friends were buying these products, I was thinking, surely this can't be it. This can't be the only thing that you can buy. So I knew that there was a gap in the market, but I didn't really know how to facilitate it. I didn't know how to find a factory. I didn't know any of this. But then I kind of had my moment. It all kind of fell into place when I met my business partner. He said, he'd actually met me to work on one of his other brands. And then he said, you know, if you ever wanted a brand, I could do it. I said, well, I actually have thought of this thing. And then, yeah, I kind of really started to buckle down and work on Isle of Paradise. I knew the technology that I wanted it to do. I knew the different avenues of product performance that I wanted it to do, because I'd been a spray tan, I'd worked. You know, I think people think that Isle of Paradise came from nowhere. It literally is my 15-year career as a spray tan in a bottle. But also, I was really sick and tired of the messaging in the beauty industry and how superficial and shallow and how bullshit it was. And I remember saying to my business partner, I was like, I really don't think we should use traditional models, and I think we should change this. And so when Isle of Paradise launched, we were like one of the first ever beauty brands to use real bodies and to not retouch. Mm. And I was modeling product on myself on social media rather than it being on a model, because I just wanted to break down the barrier of perceived idealism within the beauty industry. I just wanted to change it and make it better. So that's what Isle of Paradise did. I don't even know if I went off on a tangent there, sweetie, but there we are. That's me getting to Isle of Paradise.
No, you didn't go on a tangent. And it's amazing. I remember actually sitting in your kitchen in Chiswick and you showed me the mood boards for Isle of Paradise. Like, I remember it was just amazing. Honestly, you've just come so far. So I guess the thing that I'm always really curious about is there's a real difference between like wanting to create your own product or business and then actually taking that leap to do it. So like, talk to me about that process, because you have to have this huge amount of self-belief to be able to do that, right? And this huge amount of confidence. And I think that element of how scary that actually is really not talked about that much.
Well, I think there's so many different elements within your life and within your career that lead you to creating a brand. It's not that you wake up one day and you go, I'm going to create a brand. It's almost through frustration of not being able to find what you want in the first place. So you know that the way that you're carrying on in your day-to-day and in your work life, it's not working for you. There's something not right, so it needs to change. And then the solution almost presents itself as, well, if I can't find a company that's doing what I want, and if I can't find products that are doing what I want, I'm just going to have to create this myself. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's what led me. And I think there's so many different avenues as well. And like, it's so nice you talking about when we were sat in the kitchen with the mood boards, because it is it's such a risk. And I think I did take a massive risk, and financially it was really difficult, because I had to stop working with all different companies and save my money and put it into the business and put my time into the business and create these products. There was a massive risk that if people didn't understand the products, if people didn't understand the concept of the business, I knew that I could lose everything. And I was prepared. I had to have this almost like this conversation with myself, like, if this doesn't work, what am I going to do? What's going to happen? Mm-hmm. That for me, it was, I'll move back up north. I'll retrain. I'll become a midwife. I'm just going to leave the industry completely, because I wasn't satisfied with the beauty industry at all. That's tough. When you're in that position, that's really tough to kind of carve out your career in a totally different way. I think as well, like, being around people that you really, really trust, like the friendship circles, the work circles, everything condenses down. And I think sometimes the thing that I maybe did wrong was I maybe talked about it too much. I then learned to keep it very, very secret. I learned that on my second business. You really have to trust who you're talking to, because the people in the big companies are there to steal ideas. Do you know what I mean? So it was a difficult time, but hard work pays off.
Definitely. So talk to me about the moment when obviously you're like having all these conversations and it's all going really well. You've taken this leap. Were there any small failures? I don't know. Because I feel like we don't ever ask people about that, and we don't ever really check in like, how is it actually going for you? We just sort of look at like the shiny polished things, like I guess the journey to get there.
Behind the scenes, there were so many failures. And I also, I mean, I'd stepped into a completely different world. My world was backstage as an artist, making other people look amazing. I was always handed products from brands. I'd never created my own product. I don't have a science degree, so I don't know about stabilization of formulas within cosmetics. I'd never been in a factory before.
You and me both, darling.
There I was in a factory looking at formulations and being given lab samples. And I think what people don't realize, and what I definitely didn't realize, was that every time you make a change in a product or an alteration, the lab bills you. And so these costs of these products were going up because I just was not satisfied. I was like, this product isn't good enough. I know it can be better than this. And so we had to get investment before we'd even launch, because it was just like these costs just really, really mount up. Packaging is so difficult because if the formulation changes, the packaging has to change. You have to get, you can't, if you get your formulation signed off and you agree on it before you've started the packaging journey, the actual lead time of the product is super long. And also, like, I was living on barely anything. I didn't have any money to, like, I couldn't buy clothes, I couldn't go out for dinners, like my dad had to help me out with my rent sometimes, like I was broke. And each month that there was a delay, I was thinking, oh my god, I've got another month of having to financially try and juggle this. And I was like a PA for somebody on as a side hustle, just a client that I had that needed, so I just needed a bit of extra money. So I think that was a massive challenge. And like, I was doing everything. Like, there was a team of five of us at the time, and we had graduates in. I wrote the copy on the back of the pack, and I helped design the blobs. I'd have to fly. It was all manufactured in Glasgow, so I was flying up to Glasgow a lot. Website copy, writing my own bio, because obviously on the website it needed to be a thing about meet Jules the founder. I was like, I'm not used to being front and center, so I'm writing him about myself third person, like, meet Jules has had a career. I was like, what am I doing? This is crazy. And there are times when you just think, oh god, what am I doing? Am I just taking the biggest risk ever? And was it really that bad before? You really compare with, like, the life that you had before the idea, and it's really, really lonely. You've got no colleagues, you've got, like, everyone else is stressed because everyone's got money invested in this and time invested in this, and you couldn't pay me to go back to that time. You couldn't pay me. But I think there was just this drive of passion and belief that I could change the industry and change tanning. So I just kept going. I just persevered. But it was really, really difficult. And then, there's things like when it launches, to get a business to launch all the way is like, it feels like you've climbed the hardest mountain ever. I mean, you've got no bloody water in your bottle and your boots are falling apart. That's how it feels. And you get to the top of the mountain and that's when it launches, and then another mountain presents itself, and you're like, oh god, now I've got to run this business. It's not done, I'm not finished, I'm only just at the start. It was wild, but passion just keeps you going.
I guess when you were saying that it's really lonely, and you know, you have to like question yourself, maybe somebody's in that moment right now. What did you do to kind of keep yourself going, keep yourself motivated?
I tried to do things that didn't cost a lot of money, because a lot of my finances were really invested within the business. So I'd meet up with people who made me feel good, and I'd meet up and do things that really didn't cost that much money. So instead, rather than going to the pub for like 10 drinks, I'd maybe meet a friend, do a walk, have one drink on the walk, continue the walk, have another drink. So I'd had that social element, but I'd not spent as much money, but I'd lift myself up. I was running.
We did that, Jules, just a caveat. We did that together, and we took, I don't know if you remember this, we put red wine in our water bottles. Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember, but I was broke. Like, we couldn't go to the pub. So you just have to make it work.
But it's great.
I was running. That was my exercise because I couldn't afford to go to exercise classes or go to the gym. I had to cancel my gym membership. And different things, like I'd really, because it can be so hard to switch off, and it can be so hard to not go to bed thinking about the job, but you need to really, I knew that my mental health would suffer if I didn't, because I know my pitfalls. Mm. So I'd just kind of take breaks. I'd cook my own meals. I'd teach myself how to cook, because actually cooking your own meals is cheaper than eating out or ordering it in. So rather than it being like beans on toast, I'd like buy recipes. I'd have this little passion project on the side just to give myself a different interest and hobby. And then I think now, you know, being a brand founder is so, it's so driven on social, and people want to see what your life is like and how things work, and they want to connect with you. Whereas it wasn't like that 10 years ago. Instagram didn't exist, or it's just starting. So I really taught myself like skills of how to edit and shoot, and you know, that doesn't cost anything to do, but it's like, it's quite, I found it very rewarding as a creative. I found that I had this other creative outlet, because I wasn't spray tanning people all the time anymore, because the time that it would take for me to go and do a client was 3 hours, because I'd have to drive across London town, drive back. So I couldn't take those jobs on, because that was 3 hours away from everything. So I needed something else to be creative with. And also I was podcasting. I had a podcast with my friend Sarah, and that was like a release. I remember telling Sarah the first time, I was like, I think I'm going to launch a brand, and it's going to look like this, I think. And she was like, oh my God. I was like, we can't tell anyone. I'll talk about it on the podcast, but this is what's going on behind the doors.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, Jules, like we were saying before, talking of social and everything, you know, you make everything look so easy, but I think it's really important to share actually like how driven you are, because I've rang you before just being like, I'm just constantly having a brain fart, basically, like I have no creativity, I don't know what I'm doing, and you're always there, like you've always got the ideas and the motivation and the drive, like every day. You know, being self-employed can be really, really tough sometimes, especially when you're working from home, to feel that way. So I guess, you know, how do you do that? Like, honestly, I'm being selfish asking this question, like how do you keep being like that every day?
I think I'm naturally good at ideas. It's just something that I've always been good at. It's part of my creativity. So I don't want to say that no one else can achieve this, but I don't want to be like, oh, if you do all of these steps, you will achieve X, Y, Z. It's just part of who I am. I think that I've learned to be very aware of the creative process. People who don't understand creativity think that you just sit down and ideas pour out and that's that. Actually, creativity and ideas only come through inspiration. So you have to get yourself inspired. So if I'm creating content for social, for me, if I sit on Instagram and TikTok for half an hour each, that's not a waste of time. That's me searching for inspiration. I have to, I also have to let my mind calm. So walking, exercise, swimming, being out and about brings creativity to me, and travel particularly brings creativity. I'm very inspired when I go traveling, which actually suffered when we were creating Isle of Paradise, because I didn't have the money to travel. And also in the pandemic, I couldn't travel. So my creativity really suffered at that time. But also I think, God, every day is a new day. Like, you can't achieve everything. But sometimes the ideas come in the middle of it. Always write them down. I have a pad in my phone marked content. Yeah. And if an idea comes, I just write it in, because I'll forget it. Mm. I'll forget it in 10 minutes. And then at least I've got a checklist of things that I need to create, or now that I've got a channel, I ask the audience what they want to see and they help me create content. But I think like it's hard to stay motivated. It's so hard. And when you're a business founder, I've got tax bills to pay. I've got like things coming out, wages to pay. I've got all this stuff going on, factories to pay. Like, I'm not just doing what you see on Instagram. There's all this other shit that comes with like running your own business. And like I said to Dutch, like, you know, I don't have an IT, my husband, sorry. I said to him, I don't have an IT department. So if Pamela the printer doesn't want to work, there's no one else that's going to fix it. I've got to be on my hands and knees blowing air to Pamela and hoping that she'll start working. Like, there's no
one else. That's the blubbing promotion for this episode, isn't it?
So yeah, like you become your own office manager, you become your own PA, you become everything. And it is really, really tough. But I think I'd so rather work for myself and run my own things and keep creating than work for anyone else in a job that I didn't believe in.
Oh my God, 100%. So that brings me to ask you, because not only do you have one company, you have two. As if you weren't doing enough, Jules. Talk to me about that. Talk to me about Yantam.
Well, also, I think it's like, I always say I've got three jobs. I've got three because I have Isle of Paradise, I have content creation, and then like Instagram and social, and then I have Yantam. So I am just spinning plates. And I said to Dutch, I've got no room. She's full. She's absolutely full. But what's nice is when you launch, so basically we launched Yantam, which is my second business, which is a sustainable British wool brand, because I was watching a piece in lockdown on, like many people did, they had a lockdown. Some people had lockdown babies. I had a business, you know, like everyone takes different turns. But it was, I basically watched a documentary and it said that farmers in the UK are burning wool. And I was like, what the hell? So I contacted a factory. I found a wool spinner. My friend is a knitwear designer. I basically was like, let's have a go at ending the crisis that is British wool and shining a light on it. Doing your second business is a lot easier than doing your first. I'll tell you that, because you kind of are already built up, you know how hard it's going to be. And also your skills, you make decisions so much quicker because of everything you learn. And I don't think I realized how much I'd learned during Isle of Paradise until I did my second business, Yantam. Because then I just knew that, oh, it doesn't matter. Stuff like this, small stuff doesn't matter. It doesn't, we just need to keep going. You need to keep burning. It's going to launch on this date and then we go. And also with both businesses, the launch dates were really determined by seasonal pressure. So Isle of Paradise launched in March because it was just on the run up to summer. And Yantam launched in October. It was supposed to launch in August and the factory, things got delayed because the factory kept getting COVID. So everybody, like the whole place had to shut down and then reopen.
Wow.
Just knit.
Oh my God.
Just knit these jumpers. So it was a real like roller coaster. But Yantam is still my side hustle. It's tiny. And I think I was saying this to someone the other day, if somebody came and they offered to explode Yantam globally, I don't know if I'd be able to do it just yet, because I'm not in the mental, I haven't got the space to be able to grow it. I just want it to grow organically. But it's lovely having, you learn loads of new skills. I'm in a completely different industry. Starting a business, sustainability first and pushing forward is completely different from starting a business when sustainability was not talked about and then having to backpedal and change the whole company. That is, it's very different going from sustainability first. So when companies launch now and they're not sustainable first, I'm like, what are you doing? You're idiots. Like, you can be sustainable, you just have to sort it out in the beginning. Because actually, it's so much easier to be unsustainable in our world, and it's so much cheaper. And unfortunately, being sustainable, it is harder and it is more expensive, but you have to be the change. Be the change that you want to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you do it so amazingly with Yantam as well. Like, I've got one of your beanies and I love it. I wear it on my dog walk. You know, Bella loves it. She loves it. And it's just everything that you did behind it to create it. You know, you really took the time. And I love that it's like your Yorkshire roots coming through.
Coming through.
Two fellow Yorkshire humans.
But also like...
I love that. I really love that.
That's something that both businesses have running through them is a passion and a belief. And I'm not doing this. Neither of them were created to make money. They were created to... change that I wanted to see. So, and I think that's also something that links back to being that front-facing founder, is that authenticity and belief in your business shines through. People can see through a message if the founder is being fake. They know if it's a guy in a suit that's making money. And I don't want to buy product or service from somebody who doesn't believe in what they're doing. I'm a very conscious shopper. I want to know that the company culture is amazing. I want to know that the founder really believes in what they're doing. I don't want to buy something from somebody who doesn't care.
I love that. You can tell you have so much passion, and you always have. And I think that's what people just adore about you. And you were the change within the industry. You know, the first campaign that you did with Isle of Paradise, it was the first campaign of its kind ever done globally. And so it's just amazing the doors that you've opened in the beauty industry.
It's wild when you come to think of it, Kirsty. Back to the days of you and me, tequila shots at weddings, and here we are.
Oh, we've come so far, darling. So normally when we end the podcast, we do kind of like one mindset hack that we like to leave the listener with. But I guess for you, I would really be curious to know, what's one lesson, if you could go back when as a brand founder, back to the beginning, what's one lesson or one reflection that you would do slightly differently?
There's so many. I think that, of course, an obvious one would be to tell myself that I will get there. It will happen. I think there was a lot of self-doubt that came into play. I think that, but other than that, Kirsty, to be honest, I wouldn't change a thing, because I wouldn't know the lessons that I've learned. So even on the hard days where I didn't have, you know, God, I didn't have a pot to piss in. That was literally where I was. Even on those hard days when it was like, oh, so challenging, actually that made me learn, and that made me appreciate everything. I'm really grateful for everything. I was thinking the other day, God, I'm so grateful for the people that buy these products, because without them buying the product, I'd still be in that one bedroom flat. Like, it, you know, it's gratitude is there's such a, oh, such an important tool to achieving happiness. And I think, like, I say this to people all the time about social media and business social. I'm like, don't buy followers. Don't want more than what you've already got, because 500 followers on Instagram is actually 500 people stood at a market stall wanting to hear about the products that you're selling. So don't always focus on more. Focus on what you've got, because without what you've got, you on to the next chapter.
Yeah, nurturing what you have is so important, definitely. Oh my goodness, thank you so much. I'm obviously going to share all your details in the show notes, but what's something that you've got coming up that we can look out for?
Oh my goodness, we have really exciting things coming with Isle of Paradise this year. I cannot say they are major. It's almost like I feel like I'm launching a whole other business. And then, yeah, there's a few little things just smooching around. Last year, dear listener, I got married, I renovated a house. Korea, it just cooked. This year, almost finished, I'm married. I am going for it this year. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to knuckle down and work.
He's ready.
Get the dry eye.
He's ready. On. The Virgo. The Virgo's out to play. No messing about this year, right?
Was big.
Sorry, and he had the wedding of the year, actually, last year. It was incredible. Was there. Still love it. Still talk about it all the time. The best weekend ever.
It's amazing you remember any of it.
Cheeky. I know. I brought the fun. What can I say? I'm a great wedding guest. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. I love you so much and I'm so proud of you. And this is going to be so helpful for anyone starting out on their journey. So thank you so much for sharing it.
Thank you for having me on.
Even to this day, his story, his authenticity, every part of Jules just makes me smile and beam inside and out. We are so grateful of how much he shared for us today. And so I just really hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, as ever, if you could leave a little review for us below, it really helps as well to kind of work out what's really piquing your interest. What kind of episode do you like? What type of guest? So I can try to find more of those for you. Thank you so much. You know what part of the podcast it is. It's time to get really comfortable, really cozy as we go into this week's mini meditation. And I want you to start by drawing in just a lovely deep breath. Relaxing in this moment and acknowledging where you are today. Drawing in that breath. Really relaxing the body and acknowledging where you are today. Feeling proud of where you are today and how far you've come. Breathing deeply. And as you exhale, I want you to consciously relax the body, release everything you're holding on to. Deep breath. Feel the weight being lifted from the body. Tension being released. And I want you to invite those feelings in today of really truly feeling proud of yourself. Seeing how far you have come. Acknowledging how far you have come. Every bump in the road, every redirection, drawing in your breath, noticing how far you've come. Then on your next exhale, deep relaxation in the body. Allowing your body to rise and fall with the breath. Breathing slowly, feeling the rise and the fall with the breath. And whenever you're ready, just slowly beginning to open the eyes. Taking a moment and thanking yourself for being in the practice today. We will see you again next week.